way it was. And of course, we were pretty young, so we had to go on our school, and his mother was a widow, and he had to help her a lot. And so we went together 3 years before we got married.
When did you get married?
On June 24th, 1919.
And that when you moved to the Union?
I came here as a bride.
What was this Don's folks' home originally?
No, we moved first into a little house down on the corner here because his mother wanted him right near to work here, you see. And he quit the ranch because he told W.J. that he wasn't bringing me out to the ranch. My mother didn't want me to. And so he said, all right. And so he worked for Hutchison and Sherman with their show cattle. And Jim Hutchison was our banker at that time. And the people that owned the bank was George and Dick and Sam Benson. The Bensons owned the bank at that time. And Jim was involved in it too, and he was the banker. And they had a herd of his father-in-law, and him had a herd of show cattle. Don took care of them, and he was able to have his in there with him, see. And then we gave up that because we had some very fine heifers that he had. Although he sold those when he went to the army. And that was, of course, 1918. And his mother wouldn't sign the papers, so he could just volunteer and go. So he and Tommy and a whole bunch of them went down to Corvallis and went to the Student Army Training Corps, where they didn't give them any time to study. They just trained them like crazy to go overseas. And the day they were mustered out onto the field, they were told they would go overseas the next day, and the armistice was signed.
Pretty close.
I'll tell you, that was really close. Then the boys came home, and after that, in the spring, we were married. Don had some college, you see, and then we got married in 1919. I worked at the piano store in La Grande. I had a scholarship. Well, my father died, you know, when I was in high school. So my mother was left with the ranch and us kids, so I didn't. I took one more year of school. I had 1 year of teacher's training. And then I went to the piano store, and I worked at the piano store in the Grand for Mr. Ritchie for that year. And then Don and I were married.
What do you think about the greatest change from back, you know, growing up to now? What?
Oh, my. There is such a change. I've seen it all the way from the horse and buggy to the moon. And it's just been gradual, and you accept as it goes along, you know. But it is. Now you get in the car and away you go, you know, and the distance, you wouldn't. Oh, I tell you, it was a tremendous thing to go to Pendleton. That was almost unheard of, from Cove to Pendleton, you know. It was done, but not very often. And then now here, you get in the car, and away you go. You go to Portland, you go to Hood River, you go wherever. And they,
it's a short hop.
It's a short hop. Oh, you figure so many hours.
Yeah.
And, of course, no TV, no radio. We had a radio when Bill was little, and it just fascinated him. And he was a kid that had read. Oh, he read all the time, and he read before he went to school, and he just got more out of that radio. And he was reading, when he was in the third grade, he was reading the National Geographic in the newspaper, and he wouldn't go to school, he got his newspaper and read it, and he had to have his National Geographic, and he went to school to Dorothy Busey. And she said, I said, what do you remember about my kids when they were in school? Well, she said, I especially remember Bill, because here'd come that little bitty toe-headed kid with the Reader's Digest under his arm, and with the National Geographic under his arm. And she said he would, when it was time to do the reading, I thought, well, if he can read that, just let him read it. That's just as good a reading lesson as what the other kids are reading, you know. So he'd read that, and then she said to him, Billy, would you come up in front of the room and tell us what you've read? He'd go up and explain everything to him, you know. I never thought a thing about it. And she said, one day she said to the superintendent, you come down to my room, the reading class, will you? So he came down, and he says, what's that kid doing? He's not doing his reading. She said, yes, he is. So then she said, Billy, would you come up in front of the room and tell him what you've just read? So she said, he went up and just told him, it didn't bother him a bit. And the superintendent says, well, I guess that's all right. So I saw Mr. Conklin after that, and I said, you know, I'm not too happy with Bill's spelling. I don't think he's getting good enough grade in spelling. He says, oh, don't worry about him. He'll have a secretary someday. It was real funny. And Donna went along having a good time with all the kids, and she didn't have any problems.
When were they born?
Donna was born on September the 13th, 1920, about a year and 3 months after we were married. And Bill was born 3 years later, on the 4th of October.
1923,
then. They grew up about like we did. They walked to school.
Yeah, it's a lot of change nowadays. I can't believe, they come around with a bus through town.
I know. The kids can't walk a step.
Oh, I know.
Have to have a big gymnasium so they can get their exercises. And honestly, it's something.
Yeah, I can't believe this.
Do you know those kids walked home for lunch, just a mile, and they had 20 minutes to walk home, 20 minutes to eat their lunch, and 20 minutes to get back. And that's the way they spent their noon hour.
Yeah.
They'd rather come home and eat a hot lunch than they would to take their lunch. Some of the kids took their lunch. But they nearly always walked home unless the weather was real bad, and then they took their lunch.
No, I remember. I even did that in Detroit there.
Sure.
For quite a ways, and never thought anything of it at all. And now I can't believe, like I said, they freaked the bus through town.
Yes. And it seems strange, and if there was anything going on in the evening, why, it would walk or don't go.
Yeah. They complain about prices. They can't afford the buses.
I can see why some of them can't, but how did the others manage? They brought their kids to school, or the kids they managed?
It's a little different.
It was up to the parents to see if the kids got an education. It wasn't the school's fault that they lived way out here. That was up to the parents.
Yeah.
Now it's up to everybody.
Parents don't have any responsibility.
No, now they can send them, and even take them when they're tiny and have them taken care of. And so I can see the difference in cost. You have to have money now. have hardly any money. And who missed it?
No.
You know, you didn't buy anything hardly at all. The boys would have a little because they'd work a little in the summer. The girls didn't get a chance unless they packed fruit. I did a little of that. And our kids did, of course, a lot of work.
What was special, like, for Christmas? Did you get her, just a celebration and presents?
Yes, just one present was enough. The grandparents would come, and here'd be a big milk pan of peanuts, and there'd be oranges. And we didn't buy oranges all the time. We had apples, see. And we had just treat things that seemed like a treat to us. And the gifts that we had. I remember one Christmas, my mother was ill, and we had Christmas. Haskell and I had Christmas up at Grandma's, and we had it in the parlor, and here was a tiny little lamp lit that was mine, and there was a white muff and fur for me, and I can't remember what they gave Haskell, and they were on these little chairs. And she had little black parlor chairs besides the other pretty chairs, you know. And that was all in there. And we weren't expected to go in there, so they just could fix it all up the day before, you know. And so then here'd be candy and just things like that. Usually hard candy. And that was treat enough. We didn't expect much, you know, just a gift, and we celebrated it the night before at the church, and everybody got an orange and some candy, and we had a program which took up our minds pretty much because we had to help with the program, and that would be on Christmas Eve, and then Christmas Day was at home with the Christmas dinner and all the pies and all the cakes. Everything that you have for Christmas, and that was the size of it.
Yeah, what'd you usually have for turkey or bird or ham?
Sometimes a goose, sometimes a duck, sometimes a turkey, sometimes a big chicken.
Just varied by whatever was available.
Whatever was available is what you had.
Yeah.
And it was always just beautifully done, and there was always dressing, and always mashed potatoes and gravy and lots of vegetables and fruit and cake and pies and always mincemeat pies and apple pie and sometimes I made ice cream. You always made your own ice cream, you know. Always somebody turned the crank. You'd get the ice out of the ice house. Mash it up, and there was cream and eggs and all of that, everything in the ice cream. It was delicious. So whatever, we had ice cream in the summer. And after my father pruned the fruit trees, they were put into a big pile and burned, of course. And just when the coals got just dried and the ashes were covering them, out would come the big frying pan. First the potatoes got stuffed in there. Great big potatoes were put in there. Then out came the big iron frying pan, and the ham was cut, and we'd have ham and eggs and baked potatoes, everything outdoors when he was pruning. And that was a big thing. And of course we broke all the colds by going out there in the corral when they were small and laying down, and we'd climb on those colts. When they got up, they had us. And if they didn't, one of us would lead the colt over to the fence so the other one could get on by the fence until they got too wise and, you know, switched around, and then we'd land on the ground. And I wasn't allowed to ride down the hill on the one, and Haskell wasn't supposed to. But he'd get me to lead the, you know, a 2 or 3 year old up the hill. And then he'd say, "Now turn it loose. So I'd turn it loose. Down the hill I would come, just had, my father had a whole pen of pigs out on the east side of the barn. And the pig houses were there and everything. And Hack had been going out there and riding those pigs. And he wasn't supposed to, of course, but my dad caught him, so all of them went out there. And Hack went out there and rode the pigs for him. Oh, they always had lots of things to amuse them. And it was just things that they thought up, you know.
Improvised.
You made up your own games, or you did this or that that you were used to doing, and it was fun. There was nothing so great about it. In the wintertime, take the sled and go up the hill, you know, down you'd come, land in the snowbank probably. Just things like that. I wasn't allowed to go up McNeil Hill to toboggan now because I was afraid I'd get hurt. I was very resentful that I wasn't a boy because I couldn't do that and he could. So he'd go up and they would, they just had crowds of kids up there coming down those hills. And Andel's Lane was another place. Yeah. Of course, you came straight to the fence at the bottom. You had to be prepared. You might just go into the fence or over it.
Where about the McNeil Hill then?
Well, where, do you know where Clifford Toll is?
What's right up from the desk?
It's Mill Creek. You go clear up Mill Creek and way up. Like you're going to the power plant or Fort Bay or whatever. And instead of going left, you go right up there. And that's one steep, long hill. And so they come down, then they had to make the curve to go. Not many have made the curve. So all the McNeil kids always got to do that because they lived up there. And that's the McNeil place that Clifford and Larda, my niece, has. And they built a lovely home up there. And there was plenty to entertain you. You thought of a lot of things. We'd put the sleigh bells on the horse and hitch up to the cutter and go for a sleigh ride on moonlight winter night. Put the buffalo robe over our laps and pick up everybody that we could get in there, and then we had hot rocks in the bottom that had been in the oven, you know, and cold and crisp air, and you could hear the horses' feet in the snow and you stop along and visit with somebody and then go on, you know, and then get back home at a certain time. It was never too late. You had to be home early.
Before the rocks cooled off.
Yeah, before the rocks cooled off. Well, when we went to parties, you know, the limit, you had to be home at 11 o'clock. And that was late. Yeah. Mostly 10 when you were young. And everybody knew where you were. Your parents knew where you were. All their friends knew where their kids were. Everybody knew where everybody was all the time.
I couldn't get quite so far out as you can nowadays.
No, you're not so far away.
With the cars and the highways.
That's right. That's right. And there wasn't any wrecks that I can remember. Nobody had any problems that way. So, everybody well taken care of. And we never knew the difference, so. I think that it was kind of nice.
Well, I think probably a lot happier, you know.
We were totally happy
with
what we were doing, with what was going on, and with our friends.
Yeah.
Wasn't any problem. It was a pretty good time to live.
Okay.
Now, now you don't know whether you're going to get blasted off the earth or not. But you knew then you weren't going to be.
Blasted or bunked.
Nobody ever thought about it.
No.
Nobody ever thought about it. We were just well taken care of, I guess. There wasn't too many crazies around. We had one in our town that everybody watched. And he had a rug on his floor at his mother's house. And it was a cow hide that had been tanned and put on the floor. And somebody went there, and of course she said he bought it and brought it to her. And somebody went there and recognized their own cow. Another time, she went to church, and when she came out, it was raining like everything. She had taken her rubbers and put them in the vestibule. And when she got home, she had wet feet, and she said, "Do you know, Dwight, my feet are soaking wet. Somebody stole my rubbers from the church vestibule while I was in there, and I had to walk home without."